Welcome to Down Among the Donkeys, a podcast from the Donkey Sanctuary. In 13 episodes, we are telling the story behind the founding of one of the biggest equine charities in the world. Down Among the Donkeys by Dr. Elizabeth Svensson. Chapter 5. We Find Slade House Farm. Apart from the donkeys, we had other worries. We were having an indoor swimming pool built at the hotel, and we had to solve the Saturday night dinner dances problem. They were not well attended and expensive to organise. Niels decided it would be better to have an extensive à la carte menu. On the very first Saturday, he went up to the hotel at 6 o'clock. To make sure that everything was ready for a full evening's bookings, which included a party of 25 officers and marines from Limpstone, as well as 65 other bookings from parties large and small. The telephone rang in the house, and Neil's anxious voice said, "Bet, can you spare 5 minutes? We seem to have a problem up here." I ran up the hill to the hotel, to find Niels standing in the main doorway. "I can't understand it. Nothing's prepared in the kitchen at all, and I've been up to Chef John's bedroom. It's all being cleaned out." He had upped and walked out on us, and from the look on Niels' face, it was quite obvious who was going to have to stand in. Not one potato was peeled, not a vegetable prepared, and even worse, no meat had been taken out of the freezers or cooked off. "How long have I got, Niels?" I asked weakly, looking round. "About an hour," said Niels. "I'll try to send somebody down to help you." And with that he vanished, leaving me in the empty kitchen. Well, it was a complete fiasco. Niels made up the menu with the chef, and I have no doubt that had he been there, the duckling à l'orange, the chicken Kiev, and the fillet of steak au poivre would have been all that they sounded on the menu. But although I am a reasonable cook, I think I would have needed 3 days to prepare everything for that evening. The final crunch came when two of the officers from Limpstone sent back the Dover soles that I had sent out. The report from a very flustered head waiter was, "Madam, he sent them back. He says they are not Dover soles." "Of course they are Dover soles," I said crossly, and pushed the two plates back at the head waiter, who sent them back into the dining room once again. Within moments he reappeared with the two plates still in his hands. "Madam, they say they've eaten all over the world and that these are definitely not Dover soles, no matter what the chef in the kitchen says." Grimly grabbing a packet of frozen Dover soles, clearly labelled, I marched into an astonished dining room, slammed them onto the table next to the two complaining officers and said through grim lips, "These are the Dover soles which you have had. If you want any arguments, I will be pleased if you have them with Smethurst and not me." And I then slammed back to my kitchen. The following morning, Niels managed to get a relief chef, and I am pleased to say I haven't been asked to cook at the Solston again. The following day, I received the results of a small advert for funds put in the Daily Telegraph, a magnificent post of over 35 letters. Niels had not gone to work when the postman came, and as I sat looking at the pile of mail, for the first time I began to feel extremely incompetent. "I really can't manage, Niels," I said to him quietly. "It has all got too much. I can cope with the donkeys and that side of it, but the paperwork is just getting out of hand. I can't write 30 letters back this morning, as well as groom out all these donkeys, go up to Farway and check that everything is going well, and deal with all the post that I didn't have time to cope with yesterday." I think it was the first time I had actually broken down. "Come on, darling, I can help you. I have got a secretary I can let you borrow this morning, and then you must put an advert in and start getting your own staff. You just can't go on like this without somebody to give you some help. But as soon as you start taking staff in, that's when your money starts going out. Well, you're just going to have to face it, said Niels, comfortingly. It's going to get bigger, and there is no way you can manage without getting more money in. You are just going to have to employ somebody. But where can we put them? I said. The house is so small. There isn't any room to have an office anywhere. Niels pointed through the kitchen window. We don't need the garage, he said happily. Let's convert the garage into an office, and then you can put your girl in there with a typewriter and do all the paperwork from there. There and then we rang the local builder, who agreed to come down and convert it into an office. As a result of our advertisement, Carol Bennett joined me, and she was an extremely fast typist, managing to cope with answering great batches of letters. There were a tremendous number of legal problems in winding up the Philpin estate and a depressing number of bills that were coming in from people claiming money she had owed them during her lifetime, and in the meantime, the donkeys were still coming in. When a donkey came in, it was isolated to make sure that it wasn't suffering from any infectious disease and to give us time to give it affection. The day Gertrude arrived was the same as any other. She was extremely elderly and a very, very tired old donkey. Her breathing seemed shallow and rapid, and so I rang a vet late in the afternoon to ask him if he would come out and have a look at her, and he kindly agreed to come. I thought she'd got pneumonia. By the time the vet arrived, Gertrude was lying in the stable, and he bent down over her to put his stethoscope to her lungs. To my complete amazement, the most peculiar thing then happened. Slowly, the vet collapsed on top of Gertrude, and rolling slightly over, lay next to her in the straw. His eyes were shut, and he was breathing very heavily, certainly in comparison to Gertrude's shallow breathing. I just couldn't believe it. I stood there looking at the two of them lying there together, and then shot out through the stable, yelling for Herb. Quick, Herb, go into Gertrude's box. The vet's lying down next to her. I rushed into the house and rang the doctor. I think our vet's had a heart attack. Can you come quickly? He's collapsed with a donkey. Luckily, the doctor arrived at the stable door, complete with his medical bag, within 5 minutes. He knelt down by the vet, and after a couple of moments gave me a very peculiar look. Herb, will you just help me and we'll carry him out of the stable? Betty, I'm afraid he is going to have to lie on your couch in the lounge for a little while until he is recovered. Could you go and get it ready? I rushed into the house and opened all the doors wide so that they could carry the vet through. Shortly after, he was safely reposing on our couch, still unconscious and breathing heavily. Whatever is the matter? I asked desperately. Well, said the doctor. At a guess, he has had just a little bit too much whiskey. But it is nothing really to worry about. If you wait until he has recovered a little, and then if you and Niels would run him home, I think it would be doing him a good turn. The next day, we approached Exeter Veterinary Hospital and appointed them as our new vets to the sanctuary. They have quite a large practice. One of the first things they did was to show me how to use a stethoscope properly and how to give injections, as it was obvious that I would have to do a fair amount of work if we were not going to be involved in tremendously expensive veterinary bills. Clearly, I wasn't to start any course of injections except with their authority, and they would just leave me sufficient drugs for the treatment in progress, and I was to ring them whenever help was needed. They had their first emergency call within 24 hours when poor Matthew arrived. I was forced to tears by Matthew's condition, after a group of boys had attempted to castrate him using broken jam jars. Apparently they hadn't been caught, and to the best of my knowledge, they got away with their terrible deed. Matthew was a delightful donkey, and despite the worst that could possibly have ever been done to him, he never showed any malice or spite, I used to sit with him in the evenings sometimes and talk to him to prove to him that his faith in human nature had not been misguided. It was extremely convenient living where we did, and we had managed to buy Salston Close well from a financial point of view and only owed a small mortgage on it. The house suited us completely. It was near the children's schools and only a minute's walk away from the hotel. We spent a lot of time getting our garden nice and making friends in the neighbourhood. But there was one big problem now. It was just not big enough for us and the donkeys. We had a family meeting and got all the children together, and they took the news of an impending move extremely well. Lisa and Paul were happy at school, and Clive had gone to the convent school at Ottery St. Mary, where he had friends. We were determined to live near enough for the children to continue at their schools and to keep up their friendships, but it was not going to be easy. Carol was now struggling desperately with the post, as the donations were coming in readily, and Julie Pollicutt joined us in October. When Julie arrived for her interview, I was doing the difficult job of clipping Gretel, who had so many sores that it was only possible to do it with scissors, and Hansel wouldn't be separated from her, so I was trying to keep him drinking his milk in the bucket next to hers whilst I got on with the job. From the moment she walked into the yard, Julie became an essential part of the sanctuary. Having two people to help in the office was a great relief, but it seemed time to call a meeting of the trustees so that we could solve the problems that faced us together. And we had a few to face. There were now 184 donkeys in care, with some of Miss Philpin's still to trace. The missing 36 donkeys reputed to be in Ireland seemed to have vanished completely, as had the person who had been paid in the past. Numerous attempts got us nowhere in tracing them. Almost immediately after a trustees' meeting, at which it was agreed that we would just have to get more accommodation, the BBC rang, wanting to do a follow-up story on the original Bob Forbes interview. Obviously, we were pleased, and they did a 6-minute programme which appeared on Spotlight. The response was extremely good, and within 6 days we had received £500 as a direct result, and a tremendous number of offers of homes and farms for the donkeys. At this time we heard through one of the local estate agents that a farm, Slade House, was for sale at Salcombe Regis near Sidmouth, and Niels and I went up to visit it and talked to the owners. The minute we saw it, we knew it was absolutely ideal. Gentle, sloping fields running down to the sea, large traditional barns which, although in poor order, could obviously be put right without too much cost. The house itself was big, but we could see it would be easy to convert some of the outbuildings into offices. The biggest snag, of course, was the price. The sum of £85,000 was a tremendous amount of money to find. John Lovell suggested that we employed a separate valuation officer who would split the property into two, so that we bought the house and the ground on which it and the outbuilding stood, and the donkey sanctuary bought all the stable blocks and hay barns and the land. Obviously, the sanctuary had not got the full amount, and I just had to live where the donkeys would get the 24-hour attention they needed. The whole project was worrying. There we were, happily settled, and faced with a move that was going to be gigantic and plunge us deeply into debt. Miraculously, the vendor was willing to leave a first mortgage of £20,000, and by selling our own home, we would just be able to manage the rest. We had committed ourselves to a family skiing holiday in January, and despite pleading telephone calls, we found we were unable to cancel this without paying 2/3 of the total cost. The situation for the donkeys had already become critical, and it was absolutely impossible to carry on as we were. Our beautiful little house went up for sale, and the legal negotiations to purchase Slade House Farm started. With the exception of John Lovell, who had always been extremely perceptive, The response of other professional bodies when hearing that we wanted Slade House Farm for donkeys had ranged from those who considered it humorous to those who just couldn't understand why we were wasting our time on such animals. One gentleman from Sidmouth, and he'll be nameless, irritated me so much when he said, "Fancy using such good land for donkeys. What possible use are donkeys? They are no good to anybody. They are not even any good for food, and it seems to me a sin to keep them in such a lovely area of outstanding natural beauty." His comments hurt me in a most peculiar way. I have never needed a reason for looking after the donkeys. After all, who is to say that humans are of any more use? To me, any animal or creature has as much right as another to live. But his words had sunk home. Suddenly, one morning, I woke Niels up at 2:30 with a great shout of "Eureka!" Poor Niels, his life wasn't easy at that moment, and to be woken up by me sitting bolt upright in bed, when he had just managed to get to sleep after a hard day at the hotel, must have been irritating to say the least. "Oh, what now, darling?" he asked, slightly irritated. "Niels, I've got it, I've got it," I said, leaping up and down on the bed. "Got what?" he was even more irritated. "Niels, I've got the perfect use for donkeys. Why don't we put disabled children together with donkeys? You know what the donkeys are like when these children come round. They absolutely adore them, and they are so gentle. Don't you think it's possible that they can both give to each other? After all, we rescued the donkeys. How lovely if they could help and rescue the children." Niels sat up in bed, all thoughts of sleep having fled. "I think it's a jolly good idea," he said. "It would certainly quieten any of the critics who go round saying, 'What use are donkeys?' But how are you going to do it?" It was obvious Niels wasn't going to get any peace for a while, and so we got up and went down into the kitchen, where we made coffee and discussed different ways of setting up an organisation which could bring the children and donkeys together. A new charity to handle things would obviously have to be formed, as people who were supporting the donkey sanctuary might not like to think that any of their funds were going to help disabled children. We were already becoming aware of how difficult some people can be, but we decided to find a way of making the idea work by the time we went back to bed at 5 o'clock. We just had to bide our time a bit. We'd kept on the advertising agency Miss Philpin had used, and Ken Burks, their director, worked out the campaign for our Christmas advertising. "In the spirit of Christmas, please throw a lifeline to help a little donkey in distress. Your donations are desperately needed." Appeared in 4 national papers. The cost then was about £650 for each paper, and while the ad ran, I was on tenterhooks. The response was overwhelming, with letters pouring in at the rate of 300 a day. Carol, Julie and I spent hours doing the receipts and the thank you letters. With all our replies, we sent a leaflet explaining the work done to date and made sure that people knew our charity was registered and that it was carrying on the work of Miss Philpin. That Christmas really was a nightmare. Niels, being of Danish descent, we'd always celebrated Christmas on Christmas Eve. In between answering the post and telephone calls, there was only just time to prepare our traditional goose, which was stuffed with apples and prunes, and to make the rice pudding, in which one almond only is placed, and whoever finds it wins a box of chocolates. The evening started with a large dinner at 6:30, because the children just couldn't wait any longer. And the first excitement, of course, was the rice pudding, to find the lucky almond. We always had both sets of grannies and grandpas down, and even they got excited as the evening went on. Leaving the grandparents in charge after dinner, Niels and I slipped over to the hotel where there was Christmas Eve Danish style for the guests, including the lucky almond in the rice pudding. Niels announced to the 150 guests that the one who found the lucky almond would receive a £2 box of black magic. However, within seconds the smile began to fade from his face, as in turn hands began going up all over the room. "Here, we have the almond, we have the almond," echoed from all round the room. Frantically, Niels rushed into the kitchen. "Chef, what have you done?" he asked. "I said just one almond in the pudding." The chef smiled happily at Niels. "Oh, you couldn't just put one almond in, Mr. Svensson. It wouldn't taste at all. I shook the whole bag in." Niels had to raid the bar to find some spare boxes of chocolates, and bang went all the profit from the Christmas dinner. The purchase of Slade Farm seemed to be going quite smoothly, but just before we left on our skiing holiday, I received a bombshell in the form of a letter from the planning authorities. Allowing donkeys on Slade House Farm, Salcombe Regis, instead of cows and sheep, constituted a change of use, and we would need planning permission for it to be used as a donkey sanctuary. By this time we had a buyer for our house, and we were terrified that if we delayed, everything would fall through. It was a terrible time to have to go away on holiday, and there is no doubt that the first few days were marred by the worry of what was happening at home. But on the sixth day, we received a telephone call from the hotel to tell us that East Devon District Council's planning committee had agreed to change the use of the farm to a donkey sanctuary and allow us to create an office there.